You should see him trying to explain what those are when we go through the metal detector at the airport. Very bizarre. I'd like to start off with a little announcement. I have here a pad, name, and email address. Now, we've used some materials here this weekend, the Akron Manual and Gresham's Law. If you'd like to receive that from us, put your name, please print so I can read it, and your email address, and I'd be happy to send it to you. I also send out on a daily basis three little quotes, not all big book, generally spiritually related, but sometimes you'll get some weird stuff in there, you know. I promise, no jokes, no chain letters. So, and if you don't want the daily thing, you can always just email me and tell me, please take me off. My, and for the tape, if you're going to play this, my email address is BillC@CraigTools.com. And I've got some cards if you'd like it. But if you'd like to receive this, please sign up on the email list. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Matthew. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Were you starting off the habit? Okay. We're going to talk to you the second workshop. This is officially the second workshop. How was Jay's history workshop, you guys? Come on. When we get to that point where Bob and Bill meet in that whole build up, it's thrilling to me. But we're going to talk about how of it. We started with the why of it, and the how of it has evolved for us. It's changed over time. The program hasn't changed, but our understanding of how to pass the program along more effectively. Our goal has always been to grow in maximum effectiveness to God and our fellows. And we're going to start off with, we're going to do the hierarchy in the room. We're going to start off with Jay and then eventually lead to how he ended up sponsoring Bill and then down to me.
It's a sad saga.
We could call it the sobriety saga.
Jay, alcoholic. And God's doing for me today what I couldn't do for myself because, chimney, it's like 3:45 on a Saturday afternoon and no drinks all day, which is a big deal for a guy like me. Anyway, as I've said on a number of occasions, I came to you on the second day of May in 1979. And I'll tell my pathetic story tomorrow so you can hear all the, you know, the gory details. But anyway, a nice guy, I know you can't believe this, but a nice guy like me ends up in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just going, oh, my God. So I end up almost drinking, and I get a sponsor. And I'll tell that story tomorrow. And so I asked this guy to be my sponsor. I came in on a Wednesday. It's Saturday. The night before, I'd almost drank. I walk into the room. The club opened at 10 o'clock for the noon meeting. I'm sweating on the Naga hide couch. A little old woman with a bun in her hair and a black dress on and correct shoes. Looks like she's been to Mass 8,000 times. Comes in and she goes, oh, young man, you're new, aren't you? How could you tell? She said, I can tell you the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous in four words. Ah, what are they? She smiles at me and she says, find God or die. Not that. Anything but that. You know. But the great news is we're in Alcoholics Anonymous. And we will never presume to tell you what kind of God it is that you have to find. And so I'm at this meeting. And there's a guy with 4 years, taking a cake for 4 years sobriety. So I asked him to be my sponsor. And his deal with me was, okay, great. Come over to my house, you know, and we'll talk. Now, this is 1979. And I started to read the book Unsupervised, and we'd get together on Fridays, and we'd have dinner, he and I and his wife and her Al-Anon friend. And he would talk to me, and they would laugh at us. And it was grand entertainment. And the AA that I got sober in was kind of went like this. Are you reading the book? Oh, yeah, I'm reading the book. Are you... Have you done your third step? Oh, yeah, I've done my third step. Are you are you on your inventory? Oh, yeah, I'm writing my inventory. Okay, good, good. Are you ready to do your fifth step? Well, yeah, we'll do it soon. And that was kind of the AA that I got sober in. The AA that I got sober in, it was a hub of activity. I mean, all you had to do was go down to the Alano Club and sit there, and the phone would ring, and there'd be some drunk to go and pick up. And so they were always working with others, always working with others. But the big book was not out. People were not, you know, pointing at the book and pointing their finger and pointing at the book and pointing their finger. They were just pointing their finger and talking. And my sponsor, so I'm about 24 days sober. I'm reading the book without supervision. I see if I don't do an inventory, I'm going to drink. I go to my sponsor. He gives me the instructions. The instructions he gave me, first he gave me the four-step prayer. The four-step prayer goes like this. God, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. Help me, please. And then he said, get a notepad. And then he said, get really jacked up on coffee. He says, sit down in the kitchen. Look at the kitchen door. Think about who you hate. Entire political parties are fine. Who you're afraid of, what you're afraid of, your family. He said, sit there and think about every place that you've lived in your life. And then kind of come up with a parade of like all the people that you went to school with, the jobs you had. And if somebody'd walk through the door and your stomach would go like that, write their name down, you get three sentences as to why. Nobody's life's that interesting. And he said, write down the life forms that you woke up with. And he said, it was the 70s. It was disco. It wasn't really a lifestyle choice. They just kind of ended up there. Whose chaps are those anyway? And he said, write down what you're afraid of and money you owe. And he said, he said, shouldn't take you long. It took me about 3.5 hours. Was it a fearless and thorough moral inventory using all four columns? No. It was the greatest hits. I woke up with a yak. Yak again. Yak. Two yaks. I mean, come on. I mean, it was the greatest hits. The other way that it was described to me is think of it like a, you know those rotisserie chickens that have the spit in it that are just there cooking away? What we do in that first inventory is we write all that stuff that drips down into the heat. We want, because that's the way our minds are when we hit the pillow. You make sure that all that stuff that goes on around and around and around your mind, that's the stuff that you write down. So I did that. And he came over, and it took me a little while to read my inventory to him. And then you know, we said the silly prayers, and we burned the inventory. Oh, my God, what happened to your eighth step? You know, well, we wrote the list a little bit later. We said the silly prayers, and he sent me off to start making amends at 25 days sober. I'm a fully engaged, vested member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know that there's a bunch of people in here who are going, how could he possibly have survived? Well, you know, that's the AA that I came into. And I'm busy with the activity, and I'm out making amends, and I'm doing my stuff. And so I was really excited. You know, I was on fire. I'm picking liquor stores. I'm singing AA hymns. You know, I'm driving up and down. The old timers would say, you know, they got the call in at the Alano Club. You know, I got my Pinto. It's kind of like his AMC card. It's a, in America, it's a joke on wheels. And I'd been living in the car before I came to AA. I wasn't homeless.
It was just my outdoorsman phase.
And anyway, I'd be down at the Alano Club, and the guys would say, there's a call. Go pick them up at this address. Don't talk to them on the way back. We'll talk to them when they get here. You just bring them here. Okay. But I got my first guy to sponsor when I was 28 days sober. You know, and like 3 or 4 weeks later, he got a real sponsor. But he was with me long enough. Again, God used me long enough to get him to somebody that he could. And I was working with people left and right all the time. And since I did not have a complete kit of spiritual tools at my disposal, I was staying sober myself. And I was helping people as best I could. And that was the Alcoholics Anonymous that I came into. But the thing that was interesting to me over time is that not a lot of folks seemed to be staying sober. And it occurred to me that something might be a little askew. Now, it didn't seem to be askew really with any of the folks that were around me either. I mean, we were all doing the same thing. In those days, I mean, people weren't even witnessing third steps a lot. It wasn't the kind of spectator sport it is today that I helped make it. And I used to have him kneel with me down on the beach on a busy day. You know, lots of people roller skating by. But still is. So anyway, what occurred to me is the people that I was working with weren't as desperate as I was. See, because if my sponsor even pretended that he might be doing something,
I was there.
Because I was afraid I was going to drink. My first 3 months of sobriety, I was thirsty. I was really thirsty. Every third thought was about a drink, and I needed to drink. No, we're not drinking. We need to drink. You know, and I'm during all this, I'm going to meetings and doing the stuff, you know, and I'm you know, stopping at the liquor store every morning to get 2 packs of cigarettes and a 6-pack of Coca-Colas because I don't know how to drive and not have a beer in my hand. Who knew you could use 2 hands to drive? Thank God we got lattes now because it's the same thing. Anyway, so I'm busy doing everything that I can. Then my sponsor vaporized. He moved off to another place real quick. Little disturbance with his wife. And so I looked around AA for somebody who and the other thing that my sponsor did for me was that he gave me this thing about the activities. You know, in other words, the old Manhattan, now you have to remember this is 1979. Okay, you know, full tilt disco era. Sexual addiction was not part of the lexicon in those days. We just slept with everybody, enjoyed it a lot. No problem there. Multiple partners, it's a good time. My sponsor said to me, I'm 2 weeks sober. He goes, we have a Wednesday night speaker meeting at the club where everybody comes midweek to try and get laid. He said, this is a mop. And while everybody's trying to get laid, you're going to be mopping the floor. That mop was passed through people that I, from me, through people I sponsored, and then people that my wife sponsored for like 12 years. And it moved from the Alano Club to the sanctuary meeting. But I mean, you know, this thing about getting commitments. Now, why is it that we have the people mop the floor? Well, number one, I didn't know it, but my sponsor was showing me how to cut myself off from the rest of the herd and demonstrate that I wanted to stay sober to my new community. I didn't realize that that's what I was doing. But what happened is while I'm busy mopping, people that were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous would come up and go, hey, who are you? Pleased to meet you. That kind of stuff. You know, it wasn't a hazing. It was a way of introducing myself to the community and allowing them to meet me. And it worked really, really well. I asked this guy who, now I'm maybe a year and a half sober, and I ask a guy who's got the problems that I want. He's got the hammer wife. He's got the big house. He's got the beautiful kids. These are the problems that I want. So I asked this guy to be my sponsor. I don't want who you have, I don't think. And Pat taught me some really cool stuff. He taught me that the purpose of being a sponsor is to kick somebody into the ninth step as quickly as possible. Absolutely as quickly as possible. And that he gave me a couple other good things. He said you can say to somebody, if they've said the same thing to you two or three times or they're talking to you all the time, he said you can say to them, I will be happy to speak to you, but first you have to go to an AA meeting and see somebody who's in worse condition than you are and speak to them for a little while. Ask them about themselves, then I'll be happy to talk to you. And he also gave me another really vicious sponsor trick, which is, ask them to write about it and then call you with what it is they've written. That's really thermonuclear, man. You know, I mean, it's when you're really going to be mean to them, do that. So that was good. But this man was having some problems in his home and in his family, and they were very, very serious problems, and they were consuming his life. And he wasn't going to AA. And I didn't want that to be my experience, that if I had great problems that I would not come to AA. I even invited him to come up to another meeting with me that was out of that area of town, and he just couldn't do it. And so I went and I asked the man that I admired most in Alcoholics Anonymous to be my sponsor, a guy by the name of Fred. Now, when Pat, somewhere in this period where Pat's my sponsor, I'm still not really, I don't feel like I'm being effective. I'm like Bill in the beginning, you know. I'm sober. I'm staying sober myself, but it doesn't seem that people are staying sober. Now I don't realize that, you know, God's using me and teaching me what to do. But what I did was, is I said, well, I know, because there were a lot of guys that were wonderful examples of AA. So this is trick number one. If you ever want to know anything from another alcoholic, take them to lunch and ask them about themselves. They will talk forever. And so what I did was, there were four guys that I admired, and I asked each of them to lunch separately, and I took a pad of paper, and I said, what did your sponsor do with you, and what do you do with your sponsees? And I wrote it down, and I found, you know, I compared the notes and all this stuff. And it was really, really interesting to me about all the different stuff that people were doing. But what really came to me was they were talking about the big book. They were talking about the steps. And what I'd been doing along this time was I'd been trying to be their friend. I'd been trying to be their advisor. I'd been telling them what I thought. Really dangerous. And so what I did was I started, you know, actually saying, I want you to read the big book before you come over to the house. I want you to read this part, and then I want you to read that part, and then when you come over, you know, we'll talk about it. I want you to highlight stuff that you identify with, circle stuff that maybe you don't identify with. We'll talk about it, and so that's what I'd do. And then they'd come over, and I'd pontificate about what it is that they read. And that worked really good. I started to have guys that were staying sober, and I'm not counting really, but you know, it just seemed that my sobriety family's starting to grow a little bit. And but of course the other thing is that by now I'm like 3.5 years sober, and I'm starting to know some stuff, and I'm actually growing in effectiveness. As you're growing in effectiveness, you're growing along spiritual lines. Don't worry about where you are on the path. And God bless each and every one of you that are here today because you're interested in growing along these spiritual lines. So I'm going along, and I've got this format kind of down, and things are going well. And then I start having them read the book aloud to me because I find that they're not reading the book. They're saying they are. They may highlight a couple places, but they're not really reading the book. They're just coming over, and I'm pontificating. So now I start having them read the book to me. Now I'm about 6 years sober, and it's going great guns. We're actually reading the book aloud together. When we get to the step, we do it. It's going great. Bill shows up when we start, and he'll talk a bit about that. You know, I'm just there at the river washing people, and Bill shows up. I want you guys to know that these are two of the most wonderful members of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever met. And if you have a chance tonight to come and hear Bill talk in person, he's one of the best speakers, and his family's history is one of the most wonderful things. And I kid him a lot, and he kids me unmercifully. And we both deserve it. What happened is I've got this guy who was my sponsor at the time. His name was Fred. And Fred was one of the great members of Alcoholics Anonymous in the South Bay of Los Angeles. He was one of these guys, Joe Motes, who was a legend in AA, had been his sponsor. And Fred was like, he was like a member of a group that was 2.5 hours away on a Friday in awful Los Angeles traffic. And every other week he would drive a speaker from Los Angeles down to that meeting to speak. That kind of a guy. People who did stuff. They went around and started meetings and supported meetings started. And he was just, he was a wonderful guy. He was a Marine. And when I asked him to be my sponsor, I asked him to be my sponsor because of all the people that I knew in Alcoholics Anonymous, he was the man I admired most. If you're looking for a sponsor, go to somebody that you admire. Not that you want what they have, but that you admire. And I went up to this man, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, yeah, sure, Jay, I'll be your sponsor, but you got to know something. I'm a busy guy, and I got a lot of stuff going on, and I'm active at Alcoholics Anonymous. And he said that when you want me, you may not be able to get me. This is before pagers and cell phones. I mean, people stayed sober then, believe it or not. I know it's difficult without global positioning. We're thinking about putting chips in our sponsors, you know, so we can track them. What's he doing over there with her? But he said, if you want me, you may not be able to find me, but I will always be there if you need me. And this has been true with him and with the guys that I've worked with. Is they can't get me all the time, but if they need me, they can always find me. So Fred's my sponsor, and about this time, this is 1985, I'm 6 years sober, man, and I'm doing it. I'm secretary of the big speaker meeting. I got a whole bunch of sponsees. Life is on. I got the big job. I'm flying around. I got a credit card with my name on it and a company and all that stuff, man. And
I mean, the promises are coming true.
Anyway, so I'm the secretary of this big meeting, and all these people that care about me are saying, Jay, you're too busy. You have too many sponsees. You've got this. You've got that. My wife gets sober. Who knew? Who knew? And Jacqueline gets sober, man, and life is on, man. We are just on, and it's going great. And I'm standing there one day, and this guy at the Wednesday night meeting comes up, and his name was Kevin. Kevin's a tall guy, and he had a big trach hole from when they'd put the tube when he had the accident, and he'd been a paraplegic. He'd been stuck in a wheelchair, and he'd actually gotten out, and he was able to very difficultly get around. And he'd just gotten out of jail, and I think he was still in his orange jumpsuit because he didn't have any clothes when they picked him up. And he comes up to me after the meeting with his court card slip, and I mean, his glasses looked like they hadn't been cleaned since the Carter administration. And he was just dirty. And he said, "Will you be my sponsor?" And I said, I decided that this was the moment that I was going to take care of myself, that I was going to make a stand for my family, my friends. I was really going to become an engaged member of society. And so I said, "Kevin, no, I can't help you, but I'll be happy. Come with me to my Monday night meeting, and I will introduce you to the men who I would rely upon to save my life, and we'll find you a sponsor there." And I was so pleased with myself that I called up my sponsor, Fred, and I said, "Fred, guess what? I made a stand for me." There's a long pause. And Fred says, "You did what?" He said, "Did I say no to you?" He said, "Go and find that man and ask him if you can please have the privilege of sharing freely with him what was given to you." Click! Fred had never hung up on me. And fortunately, I was able to go and find Kevin. And Kevin had left school in the fourth grade, and he couldn't read. And I started, just to try and get things moving a little faster, would have him read a page, and then I'd read a couple pages, and then he'd read a page, and then I'd read a couple pages, and then he'd read a page. And what happened is that every time Kevin left, I felt better. And it was because I was on the same level. Who knew? And so Kevin gave me the last piece that I didn't have, which was reading the book aloud, turning pages one-on-one with another person. And this is 1985. And from that really has sprung all the wonderful work. I mean, there's all the stuff that came before then. And like I like to say, the best sponsors in the world are the people who are between 3 and 5 years sober. They're running Alcoholics Anonymous anyway. You know, but they really are. They've got the fire and all that stuff. But after I became 6 and 7, I really started to have an approach that seemed to work for me. And so that's what my life was like when Bill came along.
Hi. I had just gotten out of a hospital program. I had spent 35 days in there, and it was a good program. It was a place in Costa Mesa called Starting Point. And tonight we'll talk about how I ended up there, but I got out of there, and in that program, they work you up through a fifth step. They actually have you write out an inventory and do a fifth step, and they have some church people there that'll listen to your fifth step, and I did my fifth step, and then they turn us loose, and we end up in the world's aftercare program, AA. So I'm banging around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't feel good about it. I'm standing in the back of the room and judging you. And finally I see this guy, and he's around all the time. He's at all the meetings, him and his wife. And it looks like he knows everybody, like he's connected. And I needed a sponsor that was connected. I didn't want just like a regular sponsor. I wanted a hip, cool sponsor. You know, I wanted the right sponsor. And so I walked up, and I asked him if he would help me. He said, "Be at my house Thursday at 5 o'clock, read the doctor's opinion, and make notes in the margin of what you agree with and what you don't. And we'll discuss it. So I showed up there, and he did not trust me that I had read it, and he had me sit there and read it to him out loud. And I fell into this thing. I mean, right after we started doing this is when the Kevin thing happened to him. And here's what happened when the Kevin thing happened. I was around when this geek walked in, and this guy was ugly. You know, he wasn't, you know, this was an ugly man, and he stunk, and he was crippled and stupid. And he had it all going for him. This is the guy that you say, oh, he'll never make it. He's too screwed up, you know. I mean, some people are just too screwed up. And I was standing in the kitchen of Jay's kitchen of his house. And he started telling me about what happened to Kevin. He told me that he'd turned him down. And that he'd called his sponsor. And his sponsor said, you can't do that. You got to go find him. And he told me that he went and found him. And that he begged his forgiveness. And asked him if he could please help him. And I remember that day standing in that kitchen. And I'm 37, 38 years old. I've been around a little bit, I thought, and I'd never seen anything like this before. I mean, I started crying. I mean, it touched me in a place that I didn't even know that I had. And I remember leaving that day, and at some point later, I was going on a panel, and I told this guy, Clayton, I told him what happened. I said, God, I'm standing in his kitchen. I was just overwhelmed with this feeling of love for the guy. And Clayton says, well, did you tell him? And I go, hell no. You know? And he says, well, you should tell him. You know, we need to hear that. You know, you should tell him. So we were at Rocky Cola. It used to be Bob's Big Boy by the club. And we had dinner one night. And I sat across the table from him. And I told him how much I loved him. And he started crying. And I'm crying. It was pathetic. It was pathetic. And I didn't know then, but he cries at supermarket openings. You know? And there is no restriction on his tear glands. You know, he just... And we're holding hands, you know. It was like... I kind of like felt like Bill Wilson felt when he woke up the next morning and realized what he'd done, you know. And I might have been seen, you know. It was like... But that began the journey. So what he did, what happened to me in my upbringing in AA, what happened to me is I sat there with this guy week after week after week, and each week we read a chapter in the book, just the two of us alone in his house. And I got to where I really looked forward to that time together. Somebody was taking time with me, really teaching me what was going on. And I was good. I didn't know. I figured all of you were doing this. How would I know any different? I thought this is how it was done. I thought there was a manual or something. And what you did is you found somebody and you sat and you went to class, just like if you were taking algebra. And he's standing at the board, you know, with the circles and arrows, explaining the theory behind the textbook. Because you can teach yourself algebra. You know, I mean, you could read the book and then work the problems at the end of each chapter, and then keep doing it until you get the right answer. But in the book doesn't really explain in depth the theory behind algebra, the fact that the math is a language. It speaks, it's a language, it's saying something. It isn't just solving problems. It isn't just checking each thing off the list. It's a way to live. And there's discussion that goes along with it. It's not enough just to read the book. And I'm sure many of you have had that experience. You can sit down and read the book. Well, after the 75th time that you read it, it has more meaning, doesn't it? I mean, Bill Wilson jumps out of that thing. The person, Bill Wilson, comes out of the book. You suddenly realize this is a real guy. This actually happened to this guy. You watch the screen and you see, oh, Roland Hazard was the guy that went to talk. These are real live people whose lives completely changed. He said to me when I'm reading the book and the doctor's opinion, he said, In the doctor's opinion, it describes four or five different kinds of alcoholics. He stopped me and he said, which one are you? And we talked about it, and I said, well, I think I'm this one here. He says, well, circle it. Put a star next to it. You're in the book. Whoa. And he explained to me, he said, this book is about you. It isn't written to you. It's about you. And if you can't find yourself in there, there's a problem. But you've just told me you found yourself. You're on the path. Here we go. Hang on. The doctor's opinion says that the only thing that's going to save an alcoholic of that variety is a complete psychic change. He explained to me that his job as my sponsor was to guide me through this process that would bring about a psychic change in me, that would put me in touch with a power greater than myself that would solve my problems. He said, I'd be happy to sit here and talk to you about what you think your problems are so that you will not share about them in the meetings. That the meetings are for recovery from alcoholism, not about how your day went. I didn't know any different. I saw other people sharing about their day, but he told me not to do that, in essence, you know, that he would do that with me. What I understand now is that there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous all over the world that think that going to meetings is doing AA. And when you hear them in the meetings sharing about the same problem over and over and over again, or whenever they share, all they talk about is themselves and what's going on, they'll start their share off with, well, today was pretty good. I mean, they're like reporting in, you know. And you know why this? And I'm not putting these people down. This is a reality in Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't have a sponsor. The meeting is their sponsor. And it works. It's the medium. It's part of the medium AA. I mean, you could come in and dump. And then you should clean it up. You know? I think that there should be a little cleanup action, you know. Maybe they have somebody they call sponsor, but they're not talking to them. Maybe they don't have a sponsor at all. But what's going on is that the meeting or the fellowship is really their sponsor. So he raised me in AA to really work the steps. And he took me through that process. You know, he explained to me that more as I understand it now, that the first step is good news. It's not bad news. That I've been relieved of the job of managing my life. I'm powerless. This is like freedom. Some people say the first step is we're screwed. I don't think so. I think the first step is we're unemployed now. You know? Look at the wonderful job we've done up to this point. My management skills are incredible. You know? I'm in AA. I mean, the evidence is stunning. I'm a newcomer in AA. I'm a loser. Right? I'm a loser. The second step then becomes operable. I need a new manager. Restore me to sanity. Keep me from drinking. Third step then becomes, what do you do with the new manager? You turn your life and will over. What else is there to do? That's the management job. I take my business portfolio and hand it off, you know? You run it. I'm done. You run it. So what life and will? The fourth step. Resentments, fears, broken relationships. That's the life and will. Fifth step is you physically, literally turn it over. You can't do three without four and five. Six and seven are pretty obvious. The fourth column of faults and mistakes, there's my character defects, right? But there's nothing to do in six and seven. I haven't been re-empowered. I'm not going to pick off my character defects. We're going to make a list of amends to make and then get into the ninth step. As he says, bang them into the ninth step as quickly as you can. The four-step inventory is important enough to do poorly. Do a shitty job. If you stay sober the rest of your life, you'll do many more. You know? But just get it done. Don't snivel and whine about it. And that's what he did for me. He kept pushing. I showed up after we read the part in chapter 5 about the inventory. I showed up the next week prepared to read. And he sat there and looked at me. He goes, is your inventory done? I said, well, no. And he says, what do you want to do? Well, aren't we going to read? No. You haven't caught up yet. You got to do the work. You know? Now, he also told me at the time I got on the ninth step, they were taking meetings to Russia. And I got on the mailing list for this. I thought, I went to him and I said, I'm going to carry the message to Russia. I'm going to Russia. And he goes, why don't you go to Oregon and make your amends? It's amazing how we get things kind of tweaked, you know? So I went to Oregon and I made my amends, you know? I started showing up to people. Now, if the fourth step is important enough to do poorly, the ninth step is important enough to do correct the first time. So you don't screw it up and have to go back and do it again, which I've done. You know, I've screwed up a couple and had to go back and do them again. In this process of making the amends, he was a critical part of that. The sponsor becomes really critical. One of the things that he did for me, he had no children at the time. I had two older boys up in Oregon that were in really bad shape, and I had two younger kids at home. And he sent me on a retreat, on a men's retreat, and he says, I want you to go talk to men that have made amends to their children before you go up there and do that. Talk to these guys. I talked to a man at the time named Byron, who I started asking. I said, have you made amends to your kids? He says, well, just before I came on this retreat, my grown son and I were at a family reunion. I was standing in line getting food. He was drunk. We got into a fight and ended up rolling into the rose bushes, right? I said, shit, that's not good. And he goes, yeah. He said, I made amends to that kid years ago. And he says, I'll tell you something. Those scars don't go away just because you say you're sorry. And I went to Oregon with a completely different attitude because I talked to somebody that actually had that experience. Now, I would have never thought to do that. He sent me to do that. The other thing that he did for me as I was showing up at his house every week is every once in a while we'd go on a field trip. And we'd end up in a hospital where somebody was having surgery, somebody he knew, somebody that had a disease or an illness of some sort. And we'd make house calls. And he showed me, he says, this is what we do. We take care of each other. And we would go to visit in hospitals. And I've been doing that ever since. And that's part of the program. Like he loves to say, it's not extra credit, you know. It's part of what we do. We find out a brother or sister is in trouble. We call on them. We go find out what's up. Is there anything I can do to help? Or just hang out. We went to see this guy, Gene Jones, who's dying. This guy's dying. He's crippled. He's had several surgeries before. They're getting ready to remove one of his lungs. And he's telling me this on the way to the hospital. We show up at the hospital, and I don't know this. I feel stupid. I don't know this man at all. I hardly know him, you know. And we walk in there. He introduces me to this guy. Hey, I brought a newcomer for you, Gene. And this guy just turns and he just focuses on me and starts talking to me. And I remember clearly having this weird, this is like surreal. This is like an acid trip. Why is this man interested in me? Well, now I understand. He brought me there so that Gene would quit thinking about his problems. And Gene was sober a long time. He knew exactly, oh, fresh meat. You know. So he taught me these things. When I was 6 months sober, he said, you cannot be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if your name is not on the 12-step list down at the central office. I rushed right down. I figured that's where they handed out the ID cards. You know, I didn't want to lose my membership now. And my name has been on that 12-step list now for 21 years. You know, on one of his birthdays, it was his 6th or 7th or 8th birthday, one of the guys he sponsors was answering the phones down at the central office. And we got him a 12-step call as a gift for his birthday. And you and I and Bill Hinzo loaded up in Hinzo's van and went and got some loser down by the docks and threw him in the back of the van and laughed, pointed and laughed and made fun of him for a while. You know, took him to the Ilano Club and took him to some meetings and stuff. You know, this was a gift for his birthday. He called me up one night, middle of the night. And he says, God is drunk in Wilmington and he needs us. Now, tonight when I tell my story, you'll find I took a lot of LSD. And no one ever said anything that weird to me. And it's the middle of the night. Wilmington is not a nice place. And he shows up and picks me up, and he's giggling. I'm scared to death. And he's talking about we're going to go down and pick up Jesus and take him to the Ilano Club, you know. So, God, you know. And we get this guy, and we load him in the car, and, you know. And it wasn't very long before I was doing that with some new guy with me. Because that's how I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I want to give Matthew some time here, but I've been with this guy. I've had the same sponsor for 22 years. And when he says, and we joke about this, that it's the longest relationship either one of us have had. And I live in the town that I was raised in, that I went to high school in, and I don't know anybody I went to high school with. I have no relationship with any of those people. I don't think that's their fault. You know, I don't connect real well, you know. I have a tendency to move on when stuff gets stinky and, you know. We've had conflict in 22 years. We've had conflict several times. One time he said something to me that I didn't feel that I deserved. It really pissed me off. Really made me angry. And I found another guy that he sponsored, and we were at a meeting, and we were having a great time taking his inventory and talking about what an arrogant, pompous ass he is. And we're just having fun. We're both grinning. It's really cool, you know. And this guy, John, looks at me, and he stops me at one point. He goes, why don't you go tell him that? That scared me. I mean, actually go say it to him rather than behind his back? You know, and I thought about that for a while, and I felt justified. I felt that he had really wronged me. So I went to a meeting where I knew he was, and I took him around the side where it was dark. No one else was around. It was just him and I. I did a little prayer and meditation beforehand so I wouldn't, because what happens, especially with men, is when we get scared, we pretend we're angry. And what happens when we get scared, every other word that comes out of my mouth is the F word. My language skills leave. You know? And pretty soon, all 6'5", 300 pounds of me is leaning over you, pointing, and yelling in your face till the spit comes out of my mouth. That's what happens. That's communication on the Bill C level. You know? And so I did not want to do that. I wanted to grow up. And I told him, I said, you know, what you said to me, I don't believe I deserve that. I think you were trying to put me in my place and it wasn't right. And I don't like it when you treat me that way. Cut it out. And he looked at me and he started crying. Which just, you know, it's not fair. You know? And he looked at me. And he apologized to me. He says, it was never my intention to hurt you. I'm really sorry if I hurt you. I never meant to do that. I'm sorry. I apologize. And I walked away from that. I go, what the hell was that? Where's the fight? You know? I think that's how we've survived 22 years. Now, what has happened to me many times over the years, some guys come up to me and he says, I want you to be my sponsor. Joe doesn't have time for me. And I said, well, I know Joe. What do you mean he doesn't have time? Well, he's busy, you know, and stuff. Well, Joe's got a full life, but I don't understand. What do you mean he doesn't have time? Well, he's just so busy, he never returns my calls. And so I look at the guy and I go, well, have you told Joe this, how you feel? Well, no. Joe's too busy, you know. And I said, why don't you go tell Joe how you feel? And then come back and we'll talk. They never return. Ever. I've never had one guy come back and say, you know, I went and I sat down and had a really good talk with Joe and we determined that I should go with you. It never happens. One of two things happen. He goes back and he talks to Joe and they solve the problem. Or he goes and finds somebody else that doesn't make him do that. Because it's easier to change relationships than it is to stick with the one that you've got and work through the problem. We talked a little bit yesterday, we'll talk more tonight, about intimacy, about having relationships. I think this is where it starts. The single most significant relationship of my life has been my relationship with my sponsor. True, because it led to everything else. This was the first one. This was the first one I was honest with, that I was open with, that I took a risk with. And I have always known that no matter, even if he's having a bad day and he's in a bad mood and he gets snotty with me, he always has had my best interest in heart. He has never tried on purpose to hurt me. Many times when I thought he had hurt me, it's just me being hurt again. You know, and I didn't understand and I didn't get it. And then we talk, we sit and we talk and we clear the air. In 22 years, have I ever sponsored him? Absolutely. You know, but to this day, he's not my buddy. He's my sponsor. We socialize sometimes, but mostly it's centered around Alcoholics Anonymous. He's my AA sponsor. Are we intimate with each other? Absolutely. We're open and honest with each other. I respect him with all my heart. I see how he lives. He came to me one time and he says, you know, they repossessed my car. And I went, what? They can't do that. What happened? He looked at me and he goes, well, I didn't make the payments. And I thought, it's awful when the day they become human, you know. Because you'd think as spiritual he is that he wouldn't have, you know. That's not what happens. Real life happens. Marriages break up. Businesses go to hell. Stuff happens. If you're out in the world, engaged in the world, stuff is going to happen. It's what we do with that stuff that makes us who we are. One of the quotes that he made yesterday or this morning, I can't remember which, talking about, you know, who you are speaks so loudly, I can't hear the words you say. That is the damn truth. It's who I am when it really happens. I heard a guy one time say, when I sponsor guys, I bring them home. Or do I have something to hide? And I was meeting guys at my office at my business. And I remembered, he took me home. He didn't even know my last name. I mean, the first time him and I sat down and talked, had a real conversation, was in the living room of his house. You know, so I've seen how he's lived for 22 years. And I try to do this. I try to emulate the same thing and try to do the same thing. Matthew?
Thank you, Bill. Matthew, alcoholic. Matthew. It's completely unfair that I have to follow these guys. This is my sponsor and my grand sponsor. Bill was not my original sponsor. When I got out, I went to the Betty Ford Clinic. That's the rehab I went to. And we did what Bill talked about. They did up to step five. And my third or fourth meeting, it was in a Tuesday night step study, is when I asked this guy, if you were here last night, you heard my story. I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And when he said, we'll meet at my house and read the book, I said, I'm on step six. And he laughed. And he said, really? And I said, yeah, I did a fifth step in the hospital. And he goes, oh, okay. Read the doctor's opinion and come to my house. I didn't understand that because that was way before step six. And also, it's important to note that that step study was a key thing in my sobriety where I found this guy, because it was a place where we read the 12 and 12, and it was a men's stag step study. And I'll tell you why I ended up at only men's stag meetings after that. And you're only allowed to share if you'd worked the step. So as I went to this meeting, I thought, like Bill, everybody worked all the steps. I was years sober before I knew some of you guys didn't pay all the money back. I went ignorantly, blissfully to pay the money back. And I'm so glad that I did. I'm so glad that I naively thought everybody was doing what my sponsor was having me do. But we started at step one, and we did. And I love it that this is called kitchen table sobriety, because we sat at his kitchen table, and he had a big book and I had a big book. And we read the big book together. And at first, I thought my sponsor was not very bright, because he kept sticking to the book. He had no opinions of his own. It was, we'll read the book. And then he'd tell me his experience with the book. And I'd be like, it's like that Mark Twain thing. You know, when I was 17, my father was an idiot. By the time I was 25, I couldn't believe how much he'd learned. That's what happened in my relationship with this guy, who was a perfectly good, solid AA sponsor. He took me through the book, strictly the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't give me outside reading. He didn't take me to his church. And we got to the fifth step in his kitchen, and he showed me the fifth step in the four columns, and I quickly tuned him out because I said, I understand this. This is confession. I'm Catholic. I know how to do confession. And I had some shit I had to confess that had been building up for a while. So I went home, and I opened a book, notebook, and I forgot everything he'd said, and I wrote longhand, paragraph form, all the really ugly, terrible stuff I'd done that I needed to get off my chest. And I went to his house, and he said, we're going to go down in the rec room, because he didn't want his wife to interrupt us. So we went down in the rec room. It's scary down there. It's kind of moldy. It was a weird place. And he's sitting on his couch. I'm about to reveal my darkest secrets. And I start telling him. I start reading this stuff, and I'm shaking, and I'm nervous. This is my darkest secrets. By the end of it, I have snot coming out of my nose, and I'm crying, and I'm hoping this guy isn't going to call the police for all the things I just told him. And he looks at me and he goes, wow, that was amazing. He goes, it wasn't a fifth step, but it was amazing. And my snot was drying on my face. And I said, what do you mean? And he goes, remember the big book, and it had a column with a name and what happened, and it had, and then the fourth column. And I, yeah. And he goes, that's how you do a fifth step. He goes, I don't know what this is. It was wild. But I want you to go home and write down a resentment on the left-hand column of four columns. So I went home, and I opened up a book, and I made a line, and I wrote, my sponsor! Because he made me do that. He didn't interrupt me and go, wait, stop. Don't tell me your darkest secrets. He let me tell him. And then he said, I don't know what that was, but go do a four-step. And that was a very important thing, because it was a completely different experience writing a four-step as outlined in the big book. I think Bill Wilson was very, very bright to think, how can we get an alcoholic to find out what's wrong with him? Ask him who he's mad at. Because we're all mad at people. I think that's a Britain. The more I work with people, the more I see the genius of how it's laid out. Who are you mad at? And I want you to know that I've never done a fifth step yet where my sponsor wasn't on it. And that means I have good sponsorship. So that was something he taught me. It was very important. And I spent my first year of sobriety with that guy. And another thing he did for me is he got me into men's stag meetings. And he would take me to different meetings. I didn't start off in the Hermosa Beach men's stag, my home group where I met these gentlemen. I started off just going wandering to meetings and in the book. You know, I'd find a meeting in the schedule. Sometimes I'd find people I saw at a meeting before. I'd go, hey, do you know any good meetings on Wednesday? They go, oh, yeah, we all go over here. Because some of the good meetings in our town aren't in the book. So I started doing that stuff, and he took me to a noon meeting at our Alano Club. I was probably 90 days sober. And we're sitting around, and it's packed in this little room. We have two rooms in our Alano Club. We have a big room and a little room. And as I recall, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but this is my memory of it, is that there was a men's stag meeting in the front room, but we were all crammed in the back room at noon, and there was a mixed meeting. And there was this girl there who was wearing khaki pants. She was beautiful, and she was wearing a men's suit vest and nothing underneath it, I quickly noted. And it was blonde, and she had this little hat on, and I thought she was the cutest thing I'd ever seen. And so while they're talking, I'm staring at this girl, and my sponsor's sitting with me, And they get to her, and they call on her to share, and she said, my name's whatever, and I'm 30 days sober, and all I can think about is sex and chocolate. So he's sitting there with me, and they call on me, and I'm 90 days sober now. I'm an official smartass in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And I turn and said, my name's Matthew, and I'm made of chocolate. And he said, you're going to go to men's stag meetings for a while. And I feel like every girl in Alcoholics Anonymous should write him a thank you note. And I started going to men's stag meetings when I was 90 days sober. And I'm always shocked when I come places and I remember, oh, yeah, there are women in AA. The other half of the population has a drinking problem, too. So he did these things for me, and he was a perfectly good, solid sponsor. But what happened with this sponsorship relationship is that I could not get a hold of him. And it wasn't when I needed him I could. His wife, who's in AA, had a resentment against somebody else named Matthew. And I would call, and I had a lot going on. I had a mother who was sick. I had a brand new baby with a girl that we didn't like each other, really. We didn't get along at all. I was really struggling. I had the same pair of shoes for so long in Alcoholics Anonymous, the only pair of shoes I owned because I had no money and I had all these responsibilities, that these guys actually started a collection to buy me a pair of shoes. It embarrassed me so much, I went and bought a new pair of shoes. So I had some stuff, and I was calling this guy, and his wife would never tell him that I called. She'd say, he's in the shower, and I go, can you tell him to call me back? My ass is on fire. I need to talk to somebody. And he'd never call back. And I'd see him at a meeting and go, you didn't call me back. And he'd go, what? And then I got his wife on the phone one time. And I said, how come you never tell him that I call? She goes, who the hell are you anyway, Matthew? And we went back and forth and back and forth. And it turned out I was the wrong Matthew. She thought I was somebody else. And I went to him one day and said, I feel very uncomfortable with you. And I feel very uncomfortable with your life coming to your house. And I'm going to get another sponsor. And he said, go with God. Which also was a very good lesson for me. Because as I shared last night in my pitch, I get an ego about these guys I sponsor. And when they want to move on for whatever reason or when they want to do something else, it hurts my feelings. Or it has in the past. And this guy showed me that that wasn't necessary. But I knew that I did not want to be without a sponsor. I just felt it in my bones that I didn't want to be without a sponsor. So I was going to all these men's stag meetings, and I went to a noon men's stag meeting at a restaurant where we used to have lunch, and I announced that I needed a sponsor because I felt that I was moving on, and this guy came up, a guy named Wayne, and he said, I would like to talk to you. I think I'd like to sponsor you. And he said, but if I'm going to sponsor you, you have to do a four-step again. And I thought, why would I do that? And I was about 2 years sober now, almost 2 years sober, and he said, because I want to know your stuff. So that when you're talking to me, I know what's really going on, that you can't pull the wool over my eyes. I want to know the whole story. And it was another thing that I thought, this is a needless exercise. But I did a fifth step with him. I did the fourth step, columns, resentments, and it was an eye-opening experience because I was 2 years sober, and there was some new stuff on there. There was some stuff that I didn't have the dot, 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 but I was loaded. You know, when you first do a four-step, you have all these behaviors, but you were loaded. There's the disclaimer. Well, now I was sober for a while with a group of strong, sober men who really did the program, and I was doing some hinky stuff. And I told him, I wrote it down, and I told him. And he did something that I'd never seen done. It didn't happen in my first experience. He was writing notes while I was doing my fifth step with him. And he would stop me, and he'd go, do you see the pattern? Do you see how you did that again in this relationship? Do you see what you're doing here? How you behave? And I did. I clearly, and it was fairly simple. I was a simple guy. I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. Easy. But I also, when he got done with that, I really knew that guy. And I knew how to behave that way. And I didn't know how to behave any other way. And he said, I want you to go do your six and seven step right now. And he lived in a beautiful apartment overlooking the ocean in Hermosa near our club, and he said, go over there and go for a walk and think about what we've revealed in this step, what you know about yourself, the patterns of who Matthew is. Those are your character defects. And ask God to remove them. And it was my first really spiritual experience in Alcoholics Anonymous because I didn't know what I would be if I weren't those things. I knew how to be a liar, cheat, and a thief. I didn't know how to be anything else. And I sat at the beach And I offered myself to God as I understood God and said, I assume you have a better plan than my plan. And I gave myself to God, and that was a profound and good experience. Another thing that Wayne did for me was when my mother was sick, all throughout my early sobriety, and she eventually died, I would tell him, you know, I want to go over there, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to bring a string quartet or something, or I should bring some food from this Italian restaurant she really loves. And he would just look at me and go, you are so grandiose. Why don't you just go be a son? Why don't you sit next to that hospital bed 20 minutes longer than you feel comfortable and be with your mom? And I'm so glad that he did that for me, because I would have missed it, pushing my ego and all the fear and everything in between me and my mother. And it is uncomfortable being with sick people, even with sick people you really love, sometimes a little bit more with them. And I learned how to be a son by doing that. And that was great advice. But Wayne and I, what happened was Wayne, his spiritual path led him to be involved in a thing called Advaita philosophy. And he had an awakening experience. And he became a sort of a guru. He travels the world and speaks to spiritual seekers. And as this was happening, and he was sponsoring me, we were doing less and less Alcoholics Anonymous. I would go sit there and go, you know, my mother's dead and my father's a little bit out there, and I'm trying to sponsor these guys, and this is going on and that's going on. And he would just sit there and grin at me with this enlightened look in his face. And I found that very unsatisfying from my end of the view. So, and then some stuff started to happen with his life, with his marriage, some ways he was behaving and some business things, and I could see how he was behaving. And Bill said it. I watched how he behaved, and I got really scared because I heard in Alcoholics Anonymous that you stick with people who have what you want. And he clearly didn't have what I want. I wanted a good, solid marriage that was honest and open, and I wanted to be financially sound and clean and upfront about what I was doing. So I was having these troubles, and I got into a car with Bill to go up to hear Bill speak. He invited me to go with him, and he is very, very good friends with this guy. They got sober together. And I started telling him about my problems, and I said, I think I need a new sponsor. And Bill did two things. He said, first of all, don't judge Wayne. He said, it's none of your business. Don't judge him. You don't know what's going on. And that sounded true. That sounded honest and something that I should listen to. And we live in Los Angeles, so there's a lot of traffic, and we had a long drive. It wasn't far, but it was long. And I said, will you sponsor me? And I didn't really intend to do that. And he said, yes, I will. And I said, I think I need to have a new experience with these steps. And he said, well, what I'm going to do is what I've been doing lately with guys like you who have a lot of time. I had at that time probably 6 or 7 years. Is he said, I'm not going to read the book with you in my kitchen one-on-one. I want you to do this pamphlet. And he had this pamphlet called The Unofficial Guide to the 12 Steps. And we were going to put together a group, four or five people who had some time, and do this pamphlet together. And we'll go through it. And we do the steps together out loud. We share and talk about what we're going through in the third step and the fifth step. We don't share our fifth step with everybody. I shared it with him. But then I had to do a fifth step with him. And if you were here last night, you know that I got a teenage girl pregnant just before I got sober. My daughter was actually born on my sobriety date. Phoebe is 13 and I'm 13. And yeah, I was about 6 months sober, I told this old timer that, and he goes, that's a good story, man. Don't fuck that up. And I don't go to mixed meetings, you know. And my men's group started a meeting where men and women came, and it's about sponsorship on Friday nights. And I went to that meeting, and Phoebe gave me a cake this year. It was the first time ever. And she loved it, and I loved it. And that's a whole other story. But I was going to say one other thing about this, but I can't remember right now. But anyway, I got into this step work with this pamphlet, and it was – oh, I was going to talk about the fifth step. We got to the fifth step in this pamphlet. And I did this fifth step, and I'd heard somewhere at a meeting a guy named Rocky in our hometown. He says, you know, at 5 years of sobriety, at 1 year of sobriety, you have a limited amount of honesty. You say, I stole a rope. And at 5 years of sobriety, you say, there were some horses attached to it. And when I had done my earlier fifth steps and I talked about how I treated Anna, the mother of my daughter, I was not honest. I was as honest as I thought. I was as honest as I could be. I mean, I believed what I was saying was the truth, but it was just a little bit of the truth. And when I did that fifth step in that group of men, spurred on by their sincerity and their desire to really have a transforming experience after a time in AA with years of sobriety, to have a new transforming experience with the steps, I really dug deeply. And the fourth step in that pamphlet is very detailed. It asks you specific questions, and it's very soul-searching. And I sat with Bill and finally, for the first time ever, told somebody the truth about how I treated that girl. And I had made amends to her, and I've done all that stuff. But I got to really say, this is who I am. This is what I became. And this is how I am today. And that pamphlet has been the way that I've carried on now. It happens now. I think it happens when we speak around town, like Bill and Jay and I do, that people will come up and ask you to sponsor them that have time. And I don't have to read the book individually with every single one of them. It always happens that three or four of them come around the same month or two, and you say, you know what, I have this pamphlet. Let's make it Tuesday nights at my house, and let's do this thing. And with that, I think that Jay's going to expand a little bit on that Dr. Paul pamphlet.
Okay. Jay, alcoholic. Let's see. I think what we should do is do about 10 minutes each real quick, and then break, okay? Because we're going to come back. We got a couple great speakers tonight, and I don't want to. I think that's the most important thing to do. So, with your leave, what we'll do is just pound through this really quick, if you don't mind. And believe we're doing this on the fly. This is the first time that we've had the pleasure to have Matthew as part of this, and we believe that you know we really appreciate the opportunity to do this. Anyway, when Fred was my sponsor, when I had that experience with Kevin, one of the things I said is, I got all these guys that I'm sponsoring, and I've got all this stuff, and Fred told me, you may have to do this in groups. You may have to work with guys in groups. Who knew? I'd never heard of it. I'd never seen it. I thought that sounded kind of cultish. And there was a guy who was part of our group. His name was Rex, and Rex was one of these guys that does the program perfectly as long as he's incarcerated or in a halfway house. The minute he gets out, it's a little dicey. But man, when he's inside, he can tell you the chapter and verse. Anyway, Rex was smoking some crack cocaine. And one of the guys that I sponsor, Jim, was trying to make a 12-step call on him. And Rex needed to smoke some more crack, so he had this pamphlet, and he tossed it at Jim, and he says, what do you think of this? And he went and smoked some crack, and Jim sat there and, you know, got some good reading in while Rex was smoking crack. And then he brought the pamphlet to me and said, what do you think about it? And I took a look at it. And what this is it takes the statements in the big book, it turns them into questions. It was done by some people in Texas in the mid-40s. Our friend Dr. Paul, the doctor, Acceptance is the Answer, guy in the big book in the fourth edition. His story, he took it and he put it in a pamphlet format, and he made it available for people. The reason that he made it available is that there are a lot of areas in the world where there is not a tradition of sponsorship. And this was a way for a group of people to get together and go through the book and have an experience. It was meant specifically for groups. It's not a one-on-one kind of deal. But what happened is that in prisons, in all kinds of far-flung areas, people have used this format. And so I get it, and Jim gives it to me, and I take a look at it, and I go, well, you know, I could find a few holes in it, being the great scholar of the big book I am. But I don't think it'd hurt. Go ahead and try it. And he goes and he tries it with his cocaine friends. And sponsoring drug addicts, and the drug addicts seem to respond well to the treatment. anyway, I was coming up on my 15th birthday, and I decide that what I'll do is I'll take all the guys that I sponsor that are still active in AA and invite them to go through this thing together. And so at the time, I think there was like 18 guys that we met, and we got together and we said, okay, we're going to launch into this thing. And we became the Barely Drooling. You have to name your group. And we started going through this. And again, this is not, I'm not telling you that this is something that supplants or is better than kitchen table AA, the one-on-one working with others. But what I'm talking about is keeping the fire going when you've been sober for a while and having a new experience, a different experience. And this is the experience that I had. I met with this group of guys. We went through the pamphlet. After about the fourth meeting, one of the times that we'd really deserved to break up, he decided, this is it. I'm quitting the group. I don't like these jerks that Jay sponsors. I'm gone. My sponsor doesn't have any guts. He's not doing it right. I'm going to go start my own group. Now, if I didn't love him, what I'd do is I'd try and control him. Tell him, you come back here. You're my lieutenant. God bless it. You go find another army to join. But what happened is we went through this experience. And the fourth step that's in this pamphlet is not conference approved. This thing that I'm talking about is not conference approved. And this inventory process is not something that you particularly share with have a new person go through. Can they? Of course they can. But it's so detailed that it just, I don't find it to be as helpful. Anyway, so we go through this thing. And what happened for me is that I'd had a marriage that had broken up. Me, sober man, armed with concepts, traditions, and steps, able to transcend anything. I hadn't been able to make a loving marriage that worked for my wife and I. And the fortunate thing was we were both sober. And we both had sponsors. Nobody had to go start sleeping with somebody else or spend all the money or do this or that to create an event so that we could break up. We just took responsibility for our inability to love each other in a way that would work and would serve our daughter. But it was still her fault in my heart. I didn't say anything, but in my heart, you know, I'd been the guy. I'd been there before she got sober. She got sober and everything was great. Then I think, finally, I'm going to get this woman that's going to treat me in the way I deserve. And then she starts through her sexual recovery work, and she'd been horribly treated as a child. And so all that came up, and it was before it was in the popular culture, and we had no idea what was going on when she started to have the memories. And it was frightening. And then we went through all that, and it still wasn't a thing where we could get things right. And in doing this inventory with this group of guys as a peer, not as, you know, I mean, I led the thing, but it was just, I rolled the ball out. But as a peer, what happened is that when I did that inventory on that marriage, I saw how in my arrogance, what I did is I stood there waiting for her to get better so she would love me in the way I deserved. And I thought, oh my goodness. She could never give herself freely to me. And I went and I asked her forgiveness for that. And because we had not been able to be intimate for a long time, she was able to look at me and say, I can't imagine how lonely you were for those years. And we're very, very good friends. And it made space in my heart and my life to have the wife that I have today. And it's a wonderful thing. And each of the guys in the group had, in whatever their relationship was, they had an experience. And after a period of time, after we'd been through this experience together, and it takes about 6 months, and when I do them, they take about 9 months because I'm far too nice to the people. These guys actually have schedules and stuff. What happened is that 2 years after we started this, when I was 17 years sober, I took a look back. And all the guys that finished this, of the guys that started, there were some that left. There were others that didn't do the work. But of the guys who stayed, all 10 of us, one guy died sober. And of the 10 of us that were left, all of our relationships were either with new, wonderful people that really took, that they were real, engaged relationships and marriages. All of our business careers were completely different. All of our relationships with our children were completely different. And what I had the privilege of having was an experience of seeing the steps explode through a group of men who'd been sober for a long time. And see once again the power of Alcoholics Anonymous.
So I left him because he wasn't doing it right. And I had a bunch of losers in there that just weren't up to par with me. And a bit of an ego problem, but I was right. And alone. So I recruited some other correct people, and I started a group. I think we were the yours and mine was a seething cauldron, and so there was a couple of groups before I actually did one with Matthew. But we put a group together. Now, this has become a large part of how I sponsor, very large part. One of the things that does happen when you get a little bit of time, the new people are kind of afraid of you. And you have a tendency to get guys that have been around a little bit, you know, and they think that maybe you can fix them or whatever goes on. And I've been putting these groups together. And what I call it sponsor school. One guy that I'd sponsored for a while came to me. He was 6 years sober, and he says, man, I'm a mess, man. Things just aren't going well. I need to work the steps again. And I looked at him, I said, I'm not going to work the steps with you again. You know, I mean, that's just self-obsession. You know, how many people are you sponsoring? He goes, well, I'm not sponsoring anybody. I go, there's your problem. That's your problem. You're stagnant. And working the steps again, I mean, to me, AA is not about inventory after inventory after inventory. It's like when you discover the steps, if you've never done them before, and you're floating around like a lot of what's happened around here and your part of the world, you know, there seems to be this burgeoning thing, like, my God, the 12 steps. And it is powerful. It's a powerful experience that I believe most people in AA don't really do it. And once you've done it and you've had that experience, just like any good alcoholic or drug addict, if I do it again, it'll be better, you know. And I'm going to do one every year. You know, I mean, this is it. This is the thing, you know. And you turn something really positive and good, a life-changing experience, into this obsessive work on self. I mean, the selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of our problem. And it manifests itself in many different ways. Working the steps can be one of those ways. Self-flagellation. Well, there must be more amends, you know. I was rude to the checkout girl at the grocery store. You know, I need to go back. You know, I mean, you just watch this. You watch people just go, man, lighten the fuck up. You know, it's a so with this guy, it's just an opinion. You know, so with this guy, I told him, I says, you know, you need to be sponsoring people. You know, that's what you need, and I can help you do that. I can tell you how to trap them. You know, I mean, there's technique. Well, nobody's asking me. That's because you're a whiner. Stop whining. Stop it. What do you got to whine about? You got a new BMW out there and you, oh, my God, my stocks are down. You know, weren't you the crackhead that busted open your dad's safe in the hardware store to get more money? You know, it's been a long time since you've had the sledgehammer in dad's hardware store, isn't it? You know, it's like. Come on, life is good. Life is all right. Life is good. You're doing fine. You're just self-obsessed, and it hurts when you're not medicated. Okay? So I put these groups together, and I call it sponsor school, and I tell them, the reason that you and I, the four or five or six of us, are doing this is so that we have a deeper, better understanding of the process of the 12 steps so that we can develop a message that has depth and weight so that we can increase in understanding and effectiveness. So that when we're carrying this message to somebody else, we actually know what to do. Okay? Now, there's fallacies about sponsorship. People that don't do it think that it happens in a certain way. There is this fallacy that we actually tell people how to live, that we direct them, that they come to us and we tell them who they can date and who they can't, or which job to take, or we help them balance their checkbook, which I've done all that stuff. let's get honest here, you know. I mean, you know, I get attracted to your neuroses, and I will analyze you. You know, I mean, I have my weaknesses, and you can suck me into your darkness, you know. Less so now. But you've realized that none of that really works. I mean, it doesn't work. But the worst part about being somebody's psychotherapist is it doesn't work. I'm not a good one, you know. I mean, I really have no sympathy for you, which is, you know, I mean, I will ultimately get up and yell at you and say, get a job! You know, it's like stuff like that. So what we really do with each other is we read the book with each other. We do AA with each other. One of the things I forgot to say, what he did for me when I was new, is he took out a meeting directory and he circled the meetings that he wanted me to go to. He didn't tell me to go. He goes, these are good meetings that I know about. I think this would be really good for you. You know, a speaker meeting, a step study, the men's stag on Monday night, which was kind of a mandatory thing. You know, if I'm sponsoring you, I want you to come to this meeting. Things like that. That's the kind of stuff that we do. Do we direct each other's lives in an AA way? I had a guy in one of these groups tell me, he was doing stuff that was just, I was watching this guy leave. I was watching him slowly go out the door. And so I called him on it in the middle of the group. I said, you're doing this and that and that, and you know, you're killing yourself, man. I'm watching you leave. You know, you got to cut it out. Cut it out. Stop living like, live different. Be different. You know, because I'm watching you die. And he looked at me and he said, so you're telling me that your way is the only way? I looked right at him and I said, pretty much. Pretty much. But what is my way? What was I telling him to do? Pray, meditate, go to meetings, work with others. AA. I have a dear friend, Scott Redman, who's a speaker. He does a lot of stuff. He's a very powerful member of AA. And I was sitting with him one time and I said, well, I guess I'm just on the right wing, death squad kind of AA. And he looked at me and he laughed and he goes, isn't it funny that party line has become right wing? Because that's all we three talk about, is just party line, mainstream Alcoholics Anonymous. Working the steps, working with others, regular old, straight ahead, strong Alcoholics Anonymous. So these groups that I put together, and I'm not the facilitator, I participate in it. I've done a lot of inventories, you know, and I believe it's not about inventory after inventory. But you can't help but not do your own inventory. You can't help but not make your own list of amends. You can't help but do a third step. Every time it comes around, all of us are on our knees, and there's three or four guys that are going, oh, my God, I knew it would come to this. You know, and we're holding hands. We make them now write out their own third step. We make them. Well, we do. You know, write out your own personal third step and bring it to the group. And we all do the third step together and we read our personal third step prayers. How can you sponsor somebody if you haven't turned it over yourself? How can you help somebody else if you haven't cleansed your own failings and your own dark secrets? How can you ask somebody to trust you with their secrets if you won't trust them with yours? So if you're really working with others, if you're involved in this work, the 80% of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're always in the book. You're always doing an inventory. It's always up above the event horizon where you can see what your number one problem is. I'm an alcoholic and I'm disconnected from the rest of the world. And this work that I'm doing is connecting me with that world. And it's bringing me peace inside.
One last thing in how.
Did you want to tell them how to snag them into the boat?
No.
Well, here, I'm gonna do this real quick because the last part, because this is how, okay? You go to a meeting, Your sponsor has said, you got to start sponsoring people.
Oh, how do I get them?
Okay. You get a card, you write your phone number on it. And when you go to the meeting, when you walk into the meeting house, you look around the room. Anybody you don't know, go up and introduce yourself to them and shake their hand and welcome them. Then after that, before you start talking to your friends, go back outside into the parking lot after you've gotten your seat. Go back outside into the parking lot and look around for somebody that looks like you used to feel. And walk up and introduce yourself to them and ask them if they're alcoholic. Invite them into the room. Make sure they get a chair. Then get the meeting directory and say, do you have one of these? And circle the meetings that are good. You know, all meetings are good. They all serve up the juice. Some I just like the way they pour better than others. Okay? Ask them if they've got a copy of the big book and buy it for them. And circle something good in it and put your name and write it in there and get it to them. Okay? That's the way you do it. The other thing that you do, is you look around the room and look for people that are reading AA literature while they're waiting for the meeting to start. These are always new people. Nobody in their right mind would ever do that. Okay? Walk up to the secretary of the meeting and say, can I be the literature person? Well, we don't have a literature person at this meeting. Yeah, well, I'd like to be one. What I'll do is I'll bring the literature and I'll make sure that I'm there to hand it out to new people. Create a job of being a greeter where you stand by the door and welcome people into the meeting. You look them in the eye and you say, hi, how are you? And this is the way that we put ourselves in the position to have a spiritual experience. And the way that you ultimately do it is that when you awake in the morning and before you go to bed each night, ask whatever power it is that saved your life to please send me a drunk. And after that, let's pray. And this evening, you're going to have a couple of wonderful speakers, and I hope to see you this evening. So thank you very much.